because we have the ground game, we've actually built the practices that people aspire to create.
History will prove one of us correct.
Wait, you're not letting me finish, bro.
This is how you become bulletproof.
Have to get a name like Ophir, you have to have an Israeli connection.
I know, for sure. Yeah. I mean, it's funny because my dad's like Josh, and my sister's Iris, and my mom's Ruth, and then I just got like Ophir.
Yeah. Well, it could have been Shlomo. Just be very thankful. Say, Dad,
could've
thank
been Shmulik.
You. Yeah, Shmulik, I know.
You know, Craig is the dialect whisperer. We'll get in a cab, and he'll be like, keep talking. I'm going to guess where you're from. And they're always like, no chance. So last night we were in a cab. And this guy's talking. Craig starts giving him some dialect. I don't know what. It wasn't dialect, but like a language.
You could do like regions of India?
Yeah.
Yeah, regions of India. I'm like southern India, Goa, you know, where you at? Yeah.
It was
great. It's like a weird talent.
And he nailed it for the guy last night. He was like, you're from the west part of Haiti. And he was like, yeah. And I was like, amazing.
Yeah, small talent.
Craig,
are we recording?
Yeah, we are.
Okay, cool.
But that was a cool intro.
Not really. So anyway, we're here with our friend Ophir from Pearl AI. And for those of you...
Not from, the founder.
Okay, well, whatever. Don't correct me. So if you've been living under a rock for the last couple of years, this thing called AI, it's not Allen Iverson, although, you know, for old guys like me, it could be, but it's artificial intelligence, and now we're using it well in dentistry. So Ophir, give us the story. How did Pearl AI start? What's your mission and what drove you to create this company?
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me, Peter and Craig.
Yeah.
So I've been in really applied computer vision for the past 16 or 17 years. So basically my entire career. I have a background in engineering. I got exposed to computer vision at Carnegie Mellon, which is where I got my master's and bachelor's degrees. And have effectively spent a career of taking this powerful technology and applying it to industry. And my previous company was a company called GumGum. Grew that to well over $1 billion
but
in
not
value.
Dental.
Not dental,
ironically.
Funnily enough. It would have been a good name for a dental company. Yeah. But the idea there was that we were processing a lot of the known internet and effectively selling this data for targeting purposes. So it was a media company. And it grew to be pretty large. And we incubated a few other computer vision-driven applications within this enterprise. Now, I'd been running this for 10, 11 years at this point. AI over that period of time had become much more powerful. So come 2010, 11, 12, it's really when you start to see neural networks take off in their modern form. So the technology got exponentially
that
better.
That long ago? I keep thinking like this is a new phenomenon. Like,
well, that's when you started seeing the shift, and things have been improving consistently since then. But really, the underpinning models go back to the 50s and 60s. So neural networks were invented a long time ago. But only with the hardware catching up were you able to actually see it come to fruition in a way that's performant and also cost-effective. So I have had a long-standing interest in building a healthcare-oriented enterprise that would have a fundamental impact on the world that was positive. For as much as I love my previous company, and I did, I also felt that it wasn't the highest use of the technology. So I became very interested in this effort, started incubating this project, decided on dental very explicitly, did look at a few different forms of medicine. My father's a retired dentist. But
where did he practice, Ophir?
So he's retired now, but he was practicing in Los Angeles.
Okay. And I'm just curious.
My mom ran the practice,
Yeah,
so
me
traditional
too.
Kind of situation.
Same story.
Yeah.
Anybody fall in the father's footsteps and become a dentist?
No, which is funny because
it's usually hereditary.
Dentistry usually comes in clusters.
Yeah.
I was always very interested in entrepreneurship and technology. My sister also didn't end up there. But we have other people in the sort of family that are dentists as well. Anyway, dentistry is wildly well-suited for the infusion of technology. So this capability is an inevitability in all of medical radiology, mm-hmm. for sure. Everyone agrees on that. It's just too effective to not use as a diagnostic tool. The thing with dentistry is that you have far more radiographs captured annually than any other form of medicine. So there's just like a lot of quantity there.
Yeah, no one's taking routine 14 to 25 or 28 x-rays per year or whatever.
Exactly.
Or 4 to 4.
It's the only form of medicine we are always getting.
Right. There's no other one.
Taken consistently. And in addition to that, the clinical need is through the roof. So something like 49 percent of caries go undiagnosed. Thank you. Something like 42% of periapical lesions go undiagnosed. Like 22% of the caries identified are not actually carious lesions. The numbers are ridiculous. So there was a study back in 1997 that was a really interesting one. It was a Reader's Digest article. Did you guys see this article?
Yes, keep going with it, but because I can't.
So a journalist went to 50 states.
That's right.
And got 50 diagnoses from 50 dentists in each state. His treatment costs came in somewhere between $300 and $0, I think, and $30,000. The recommendation. We ran our own study, an independent study, large scale, 136 practitioners. Asked them to diagnose and treatment plan an FMX set.
The same FMX.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. 136 practitioners. This is a study available on our website. And we saw treatment costs between $300 and $36,000. Very similar kind of results. And there was very, very low concurrence.
There were certain teeth in the study that had
basically a coin flip as related to the detection of things like recurrent decay or caries detection, stuff like that.
Diagnosis only from the radiographs, or is there pictures and...
Only from the radiographs.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
So you're not checking things clinically.
Wow.
So pretty crazy results, and it just speaks to the benefit of a technology like this. If you think about it just very rationally, it's really hard to identify incipient decay. It's really easy to miss periapical lesions, not even be looking for them. Calculus, early bone loss. What we want to do as a dentist, I'm not a dentist, but what you want to do in medicine is identify things early so you can treat them preventatively. And quality care begins with accurate diagnosis, right? So if you're already missing the mark at the very start of the process, you can't possibly deliver good care.
Amen.
It's a foundational step. So
now AI comes
into
the picture. We surface 37% more disease on average per radiograph encounter. This is like per the clinical trials with the FDA. We have an impact on case presentation and treatment acceptance that's over 30% on average.
And just for the listener, because I had the benefit of actually seeing it. Yeah. So, you know, obviously we as dentists love to show radiographs to our patients, to which patients always say, what are those, my toes? Exactly. Like, I don't know what I'm looking at. And there's been a lot of modalities. I don't want to name any names because they're still viable, but they've always showed, like, in quantitative measures how to detect someone's cavity.
Yeah.
Whether it's laser diagnosis, whatever the hell it is. It's just been a way as an adjunct to help the dentist communicate the level and severity of decay. So go through what you're talking about and why treatment acceptance is highlighted. What's the animation process?
So we offer a range of different tools and capabilities, but the thing we're best known for and the most fundamental capability that we're all referring to, we call second opinion.
Right.
And there that manifests visually is, like you said, you show a patient a radiograph today, everyone knows what an x-ray looks like. It's a bunch of sort of gray, white, and, you know, smudges and other items. So what we do is very simple. We take that that black and white or grayscale image, and we colorize it. So we'll identify disease. We'll identify cavities, for example, and we'll highlight them in bright pink. You can roll over that bright pink area. You could see how much has encroached into different elements of the oral anatomy.
Yeah, I saw that superimposition tool where you superimpose the enamel, dentin, you see
yeah,
the
and that
CEJ.
Comes on top of
That's
it.
Sick.
So we're already identifying, we're measuring bone levels, we're identifying caries, all these different diseases. And then on top of that, you're able to also segment out the oral anatomy. So you could see, you know, the enamel and the pulp and all the elements of the tooth. So suddenly now, if you're a patient, you're like, okay, this is my tooth. I can see that I have decay. It's encroached this much percentage into each element of my tooth. It's this close to the pulp, right? If it touches that, I'm going to have to get a root canal. Suddenly you can have a functional conversation with the patient where they like fully understand it. And that's profoundly different. That's never occurred before because typically you have a doctor pointing to a very confusing grayscale thing. That means nothing to the patient.
And
they're recommending this is $3,000 of treatment. And
yeah,
it
patients want to know. Show me what you
say,
see.
I trust you, doc.
Yeah. Well, yeah. They say, like, hey, I just went to my dentist in New York, and you know they didn't see this here a year ago. And then you're kind of stuck. You're like, well, let me pull up the x-ray for you. And depending on the quality of your monitor or where you're around the room, and they're kind of doing that isometric sit-up trying to see the monitor with you, it's like this is a definitive way. And patients always have this halo effect. Like there's been studies that when a patient is scanned intraorally, all forms of acceptance of treatment go up. Mm. So if you use whatever scanner you use, if you scan a patient and go over the scan, the all forms of treatment percentages and acceptance go up.
It's a perception of high tech.
It's a perception of high tech. There's a halo effect on it. And imagine if they go to an office where there's a Parole AI and they have this tool and they're being told what they need. And they go to another dentist and like just showing, where's your AI diagnostic? Yeah. Like where's the animation to show me what's going on? It might be an expectation for a patient to know.
It's inherently confusing. There's already a trust problem in dentistry and in medicine in general in America, because in America a lot of these are for-profit enterprises, right? If you look at back to that article I talked about, the Reader's Digest one, like the last paragraph, the journalist went to the head of the ADA and he's like, what do I do as a patient to try and drive better trust in what the doctor is telling me? And the ADA person said, well, we recommend you go and get second and third opinions, and like that way you can kind of take charge of your own oral health. And the last line of the article is like, I went to 50 doctors, I got 50 opinions, and I don't feel comforted.
And none of them the same, right?
None of them are the same. That's the problem. He actually feels less comfort because seeing
I think I'd like to point out something that's just unfair for the dental profession is that, when you go to the medical doctor, and I'll just use my own example here, I was going to a very basic family practitioner, and he's always, every time I go there, he's like, you're doing great, you're totally healthy, everything looks great.
Yeah.
And then someone encouraged me to go to the Cleveland Clinic and do an executive physical, and Peter's like a biohacker and he's always really ahead of his health, and I was told like, hey, your A1C is getting close to being pre-diabetic, you may want to consider it. So in like medicine, it's like, you're fine, you have diabetes. They could have prognosticated, they could have said, hey, you're 32, you're 5.1 on your A1C, you're 34, you're 5.3. At this rate,
you're
50, you could be pre-diabetic. Yeah. And I want to speak to that.
Yeah.
Because I think what's happening, and the reason why there's such disparate diagnoses amongst different dentists, is we all have a threshold for the future. Some people are just preventing you from getting out of trouble. Like, don't worry, we'll watch that.
Watch that.
When it hurts, call me. Well, shit, when it hurts, I need a freaking root canal. Right. Don't tell me that. Like, I don't want to be told I have diabetes. I want to be preventative.
Yeah.
So in dentistry, we have a beautiful profession that we help people become optimally well and not just unsick acutely.
Right.
So speak to how AI can prognosticate and or compare.
So massively.
I don't know this feature.
Just back to the, to the caries for people that listen to the podcast. The caries is a cavity, right?
Oh, no, we have dentists. Okay, no, if you listen to this, you'll be the first non-dentist listen to it.
Perfect. Yeah. Sometimes I forget. We'll actually color the caries detection differently if it's enamel only or encroached further. And patients really like that too, because you're able to show them this light pink detection. You can say, like, look, this is early decay. We can treat this totally preventatively. Here's the course of sort of routine care to engage in, and hopefully we can just never have to do any sort of drilling on this tooth. If you think about the dentist's day-to-day reality, they're extremely burdened, right? It's just like you're running a business and you never learned how to do that, right? Thank God my dad had my mom
thank God they have Bulletproof, because that's what we focus on.
Yeah.
We focus on helping dentists.
I mean, that part of it is so... My dad is an amazing dentist.
My dad, too.
Not equipped to run a business component of it, right? So thank God he had that set up. And then you're looking at dozens of radiographs a day, and you have other things in your mind. There's just like a lot to do, and these things are just inherently hard to see, right? So it's hard to be generating very totally consistent care across all patients. Does this solve that entirely? Of course not. But it is a massively helpful tool in unburdening the practitioner and enabling to more comprehensively review radiography, which is a very simple proposition, but a very powerful one.
Well,
with every patient.
Let me double click on what I was trying to get clarity from you from before. Do you have, and again, I'm not as familiar, I just signed up for Parole AI in full disclosure just now, although pretty you've had in your practice for quite a while. Does it have the capability to compare the trend of x-rays? So in other words, a small area and then show the next and have some sort of comparison feature between two different x-rays?
You could do side-by-side comparisons. So you can show this is where you were at 2 years
trend
ago, here's
time.
Where you're at today.
Okay, got it.
Now, we have actually built capabilities that are able to use more generative models to show how that will progress into the future.
Sure.
But we are an FDA-cleared medical device. There are very stringent rules around what we do. And the things that we do need to be cleared by the FDA, right?
So you can't just say for animation purposes.
We can't just do the animation.
You show like this
because,
homeless person
and that's
with no
also
teeth.
Not only that,
this is you in 7 years.
Not only that, but a detection versus an animation that is sort of trying to determine what's going to occur in the future is actually a higher level of clearance. So there are limit. You know, there are there's more hoops to jump through to provide certain capabilities to the market.
Okay, I just want to go back one second because it was a pretty interesting personal story for me to hear more about. So you had this massive success. I think you said a billion. What was the number that you grew the first company, Gum Gum?
Yeah, a company worth well over $1 billion.
Okay, how old were you at that point when you had that valuation or exit?
Well, I mean, I started the company. I was probably just turning 24. Just turning 25, maybe. I was probably late 24s.
And then when you exited?
So we didn't actually exit, technically. So it was supposed to go public around March of last year, but then the markets all crashed. Like,
yeah, of course.
Right in time, of course. Now, there have been exit-ish like events along the way with that company, as there are when you have a valuable company and people are able to sort of engage in secondary transactions and stuff like that. But I'm still the largest single, or largest common shareholder of that company.
Is it still positive revenue? And
very profitable.
Okay, got it.
Growing really rapidly, hundreds of millions of revenue. Yeah.
Good for you. So what's your role with them right now?
So my role now, I've stepped off the board.
Okay.
I'm still very much in touch with the company and helpful. I'm the largest common shareholder, like I mentioned, so I have that kind of relationship. I put, it's my management team from before that I put in place.
Okay.
And I'm very close to the board and all that, but I have no day-to-day responsibility with that company anymore.
So what percentage of your day-to-day life is dedicated towards Pearl at this particular moment?
150.
Okay, got it. You're sleeping on the floor of the factory.
Yeah, it's all Pearl all day. It kind of reminds me, I think we've exited this now, but the early days of Pearl reminded me of the early days of Gum Gum.
Yeah.
But, I wasn't as young, and I was older, and I'd done pretty well, so it was a different kind of reality to have to go into slog. But there's no way to build a company like this without the slog. I mean, it is a difficult endeavor. And it feels good to, exit out of that period and just get into growth mode. Because, it's painful.
So I want to just ask one question here. I was just thinking, what data do you show as far as treatment acceptance from the patients? Do you have any data points to show that once the person adopts Pearl and is using it, what percentage?
Yeah. So we've done a bunch of case studies around this. We typically will show 30%+ increase in case.
30%+ increase. That's wild. Yeah. And I understand. Please correct me if I'm wrong, but there's two ways to adopt Pearl. There's one, which is you have just basically the software, and then you have what's the model you told me before,
So we have what we call standalone. And what we call native.
Okay, so it's like basically $300 or $600 a month, roughly. Is that what it is?
So if you just want the chairside diagnostic support, second opinion, that's $299 a month.
Okay.
And if you want the capability where we actually correlate the data in the practice management system with the data from the imaging system, which is really powerful tool set for all the stakeholders in a practice, enhanced AI-driven morning huddles, entire patient population level review, AI-driven call sheets,
Like there's $300,000 worth of undiagnosed restorative treatment here.
So the first thing you see when you log in is a series of funnels,
right.
And it says, here's an endo funnel, here's a restorative funnel, here's an abaction funnel, and it just says, here's all the undiagnosed opportunity in your patient population. So we see what's been planned, what's been treated, and what's undiagnosed. So we'll surface millions of dollars on day one, typically in just undiagnosed.
Because it's looking at the whole database over time, right?
Because we know it's in the PMS, so we know it's been identified, we know it's been treated, and we know what we've also found, so we're able to correlate all that. Very powerful.
And the problem is those cavities are turning into crowns, those crowns are turning into root canals, and those root canals are turning into implants. So it's not $1 million worth of dentistry, it's millions of dollars worth of damage that's getting worse over time.
Yeah.
And doctors really need to see that.
And if what you find with practices that engage in specialty care, for example, this is a phenomenally effective approach of just filling schedules, making sure that, the perio chair or the endo chair is always filled. If you have them coming in one day a week, or if you're referring out to a specialist, it's very effective for that use case.
Hey everybody, registration is now open for our 7th annual summit. Is that right, Peter? Our 7th?
7th.
That's crazy. This time at the beautiful JW Marriott Camelback in Scottsdale, Arizona, you can immerse yourself in innovation, inspiration, unite your team, which is most important, and at the same time, earn 16 CE credits. Renew your practice, transform your life, June 14th and 15th. Registration is now open. Don't delay. These things always sell out. This one will as well. Go to bulletproofsummit.com. 2 days that will redefine your practice life. We guarantee it.
What about tooth wear? Something I'm really passionate about. So what I find is a massive hole globally in the dentist diagnostic capability to understand tooth wear. So I'm a big aligner guy.
Yeah.
KOL for a couple different aligner companies. And what I find is that the occlusion conversation is not happening as frequently as it should, because dentists are focused on the acute forms of disease, cavities and perio. So they see a 22-year-old girl. She has no cavities, no perio. Good. Yeah, Diane looked great. See you in a year. But what we don't notice is, because of the position of the teeth that she's wearing, and we don't catch it until it's statistically, you know, visually visually visible. You know what I mean?
I'm a grinder. I'm familiar. I have like
right. But the typical thing in that diabetic analogy, it's like, Ophir, you're fine. See you in a year, and then Ophir, you're 40. Let's do full mouth reconstruction on you.
Right.
So and you know, there's great scanning tools. You know, the intraoral scanners that we all use can show the dimensions of teeth, but dentists are not having the level of conversations that they should.
Yeah.
Because of the timeline, they feel like, oh, what are you trying to do? Recommend me like Invisalign or whatever? And no, it's actually, if you don't correct this, you're going to need major dentistry.
I mean, the reason this is an exciting space from a technical perspective is because there are so many opportunities to apply AI to positive effect. So what have we done to date? And what is really phase one of the organization? We've gotten FDA clearances. We've gotten the ability to identify disease and other conditions and oral anatomy comprehensively on 2D. We've gotten regulatory clearance in 120 countries. And now we're deploying this technology into the world. But for every range of specialty, for CT,
what about scanner?
For ortho, there's just like an endless amount of opportunity to
improve. But where
to improve
specifically is massive. Because I think your AI tools could see that, you know, teeth are pyramid shaped. So as you wear them down.
I mean, our priority list is 5 years long, but is also constantly being rejiggered. So
but is wear part of your priority
wear
list?
Wear has been discussed and it's on the list somewhere. I don't think it's high priority, but that's
interesting. Such high priority.
Yeah.
High priority because people are coming about it. Dentists are coming about the orthodontic conversation to totally.
What's the best way to identify wear? Would you do it with the intraoral scanner, radiographically?
It would definitely have to be intraoral scanner, I would think.
Or just full mouth series of pictures, like actually like SLR
style
pictures.
Well, X-rays could compare, but let me just kind of rewind 1 second. So the problem is that dentists are very comfortable with the immediate forms of disease, like the medical thing I just said. And what doctors are doing, because I'm on a lot of advisory boards to help people do more clear aligners or introduce orthodontics into their practices. So the typical question is, hey, Ophir, I'm your dentist. You know, do your crowded teeth bother you? No, I like them. They're fine.
Yeah.
It's not this, hey, did you realize that you're 26 years old,
your
central incisor, you've only owned that in your mouth for 12 or 15 years, and you've lost 15 to 30%.
Right.
So just as a tool, like going back to the diabetes thing, by the time you're 45 or 48, if you keep up the patterns that you have, you're gonna lose at least 40% of your tooth structure.
Wow.
And that's the reality.
I'm surprised the intraoral scanner company, are they involved in sort of looking into this, like iTero?
No, not at the moment. So iTero is wonderful because it has what's called a weather map. Uh-huh. So you scan the patient and then you click on a button and it shows like a severe weather map, like red for severe and grinding forces. But what you have to do is mechanically turn the teeth towards the patient and say, see how thick your teeth are getting down here? See the dimension of them? Because teeth are pyramid shaped. So as you wear them, they get thicker, buccolingually. Yeah. And patients always, I've been a dentist for 24 years, and it's always, why did my dentist never tell me this?
Yeah.
And the dentist's like, well, I don't want to tell him
it's
about it.
It's a hard conversation.
Because it's the timeline conversation. Mm-hmm. So if I went to my doctor and he's like, hey, dude, you better be careful with your blood sugar. Like, you'd go to 5 or 10 other doctors and be like, no, you don't have a problem with your blood sugar. You're 5.2 on your A1C. They don't realize that there's a prognostication of that.
I think you make a great point. I mean, I feel like I'm exactly in this boat.
You are.
For all my health. Meaning, like, I go to all the doctors, and they're just like, great. And I know one day I'm going to go and be like, you're fucked.
Yep.
Right? Yeah, they are going to say that. They are going to say that you're fucked.
I need to go take it into my own hands. I got to go to these clinics and do deeper reviews.
I went to a cardiologist before I ran my first marathon. He's like, what the fuck are you doing here? My patients are all sick. I'm like, no, but I'm about to run a marathon.
But don't you think it's a systemic issue with medicine?
It is,
and
but this is the reason for the Reader's Digest disparity.
Yeah.
There was good dentists in there that said, hey, Ophir, I'm looking at you right now. You have some wear.
Yeah.
You know, I can't help it. I'm a dentist. Yeah. You're probably judging my clothes because you're from LA. I don't know. Does that draw any power? Well, whatever. But I'm just saying you have some wear.
Yeah.
It's not bad, but I can see there's a, you know, left alone without some form of repositioning of your teeth or some sort of night guard, you're going to wind up in trouble. And if you go to a dentist, they'll say, hey, Ophir, you're doing great. No cavities, no root canals. You look great. See you later. They're not giving you the opportunity to learn about the next level of wellness or optimal health.
Totally.
So that's for me, I think that would be a
no-brainer. You're right, because if you could bring straightforward technology to bear to assist in that effort, then it's going to be very helpful. But it also is a systemic issue. Like, both need to meet somewhere.
Right, but the scanner correlation. Could be the unlock. Imagine the scanners. Like, you have five.
Yeah.
iTero does a wonderful job at giving you before and afters. It'll click back and forth, and you can show a patient, like, hey, here you are in 2018. Here you are today. And they can instantly know, shit, that was 6 years. I'm 29. I better do something because you can see it.
I would agree with you that it's desperately needed. You are a great communicator in that you've been able to say to the patient, hey, this is going to be a problem later down the road. Most dentists will look for
the easy.
How did I get? Yeah. Hey, Ms. Jones, broken. I can fix it. Right. It's the at bat. Can I hit this ball?
Right. They don't want to overwhelm. So they don't want to be rejected. They also don't want to scare the patient.
Well, they don't want to have what Peter and I call the sweaty back conversation. Yeah. Be like, hey, Mrs. Jones, you're going to be in trouble.
Yeah.
Because they're scared of confrontation. Right. That's why the AI, the Diagnodent, the AI, whatever the mechanism you're using, some are real and some are not. But it's like, hey, you have an empirical score of 98. We better do your cavity.
Yeah.
And then, by the way, once they do that, they're like, and by the way, the whole quadrant that has an old silver filling there, we should fix that. So it's like dentists need this.
Yeah. I mean, there's something. I'm a huge believer. I think you are too. In just like visualization and visual aids, because a picture speaks 1,000 words, and like that is just very true. And when it comes to something like medicine, where everything is already overwhelming and confusing, you're able to just show simple pictures, whether you're showing where or you're identifying some disease, and you're just able to like point it out and turn it into a narrative. Like, it should be a story. Be like, here's what's happening. Here's what we're going to do to address it. Here's what you can do to prevent similar things in the future. That is, like, the way that our brains are constructed to take in information comfortably.
Of course. I always say, if patients could understand what we know, they would make the right decisions for them.
Right.
It's a failure of communication for us. We choose to be dentists because we're not.
Dentists have a lot to do.
But we have limited time.
I'm sorry, what has
you don't
a lot
have
dentists
time.
Have to do a lot well. It's hard. It's
yeah.
Hard.
So no,
it's,
I know.
It's a hard job.
I know.
Yeah.
So I have a question. We do a group panel. There's two other guys who do a podcast with us, and I asked this question to them, like, what are the constituents of where a dentist is valued? You know, diagnostician, or artist. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So I revert back to when I was growing. How old are you?
41.
All right. So you probably remember when I was wanting to go somewhere and my parents, I said, hey, I want to go to the mall or somewhere I hadn't been. We broke out an atlas and we looked at, all right, it's A6 and you followed this around and that was the map to get to there. Then GPS came and all of a sudden now we follow this. People will follow GPS off a cliff if it tells them to go there. Kind of thing, right? We just become branded. You put it in and you follow the computer. My fear is, not fear, but do you possibly see that same kind of analog happening where almost the repetition of the dentist diagnosing for their own acumen gets
displaced? Bias, you're saying bias? Or
just like you become reliant, that the skill of diagnosis becomes relegated.
Well,
to
don't we become reliant on everything? Aren't you reliant on
it's
the
a
iPhone?
Good, I think it's a legitimate question, but here's what I would say. I would say that like we work with a lot of dental schools, and I speak with the deans of these schools, and they all say the same thing. Like we know we're not sending our students into the field proficient at identifying, you know, caries, for example. And the expectation is that somehow they're going to learn in the field and get better. The problem is there's no consistency of feedback. Mm-hmm. You don't have a mentor.
Right.
You're not necessarily getting better. It might take you 20 years to get better, and look how much damage has been done in that period of time. So
100%.
One thing that I would say about our tool set is you just graduated college. You go and you work at, you know, wherever, and you're an associate practitioner, and you have training wheels, and you're actually getting feedback. So I think there's an argument to be made. I don't know, because we haven't said it either way, right, to be fair. But there's an argument to be made that, like, this is actually showing me and helping me to become a better
More of a mentor,
identifier.
Digital mentor, so to speak.
So like a digital mentor.
Yeah, okay.
But the alternative is also really bad. It's just like, if you go into a DSO environment, what is the problem? The problem is standard of care, and it's impossible to, like, you get to 3 practices, let alone 500. It's impossible to manage this situation. You're performing chart audits. You're going to do some 10 charts out of some subset of practice. That's not giving you a real audit. We're looking at 100% of
my concern matters not. Here's the deal. My concern matters not because, like, the toothpaste is not getting put back in the jar. Like, AI is out. It's here to stay. It's coming. It's only going to advance more and more and more. And so, I'm not.
But I do want to
playing
be really
a counterbalance
clear.
To it.
It's an assistive device. It's designated as an assistive device. It is called second opinion, not first opinion. It is intended to point out areas of interest so that practitioners can check things clinically or otherwise make an executive decision.
Will you promise me you won't start a robotic company that displaces
robots? I think that's not a risk.
Well, honestly, I think that would be the best possible thing, is like some sort of clamped on tooth-borne device that would like mill your tooth, like being braced by the count. Like almost like guided surgery.
Yep.
It's rigid. I mean, listen, you can sneeze and move all around. I mean, that would be better for everybody.
Like a LASIK surgery kind of thing.
Yeah. The point I'm trying to make is not about us. It's about the patient.
I know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe in a hundred, like, we're very advanced with software.
The pilots felt this way, too. They're like, when it was flyby-wire, right, the Airbus, like, what are you talking about? Like, they had to build in, like, hydraulic feedback.
Right.
You know, even if it's brake-by-wire, there's built-in hydrostatic pressure into the pedal.
We're not nearly advanced with, like...
But humans are the worst part of this whole process, by the way. Like, were you there for this morning? Like, they were talking about the F1 drivers. The car is, like, this most amazing machine. Yeah. And even the best drivers, the F1 drivers... are still the weakest link. They're terrible drivers.
No, Max Verstappen is not terrible.
No, but they are all the weakest link. They're just like, why can't we just omit the driver? We have to worry about G-forces.
I bet you there will be some kind of robot. That is an area where robotics will make sense, because that is if you have a track and you're doing the same thing and it just comes down to the quality of the vehicle, you could do that there. If you're talking about robotic integration into things like surgery, where there has been some like development there, it's just like, it's such a hard... regulatorily heavy reality, and we're just like, why don't we have humanoid robots?
Aviation. Yeah. Aviation, if it wasn't for the pilot lobby, I mean, I think it's I know your dad's a pilot,
so Tesla's in the sky.
Yeah, I think we can all argue. I mean, there was something about like, I'm getting way over my skis here, but I think I've heard research that the pilot is the poorest interface of the aviation industry. From what I understand,
part of it's psychological too, is that you like feels better to know a human is there.
They actually recommend. Well. I can tell you, my dad was a pilot for 40 years, and they said we recommend that you put on autopilot 800 feet in the air and take it off 800 feet before landing.
Right.
That's it. We'd rather the computer do everything else. So you're kind of spot on.
Yeah, so I just think that, you know, I know you're nostalgic for the profession of dentistry, but these tools are, they're helping us. You know, I mean, the electric handpiece is a great tool, but it's assisted in making us more efficient.
I was speaking recently with the head of radiology from Johns Hopkins, he's a great guy, Dr. Elliot Fishman, and he studies this stuff really closely and produces a lot of content around it as well. And, you know, what he basically says is like AI will not replace radiologists. But AI will replace radiologists that don't use AI.
That's a great way of looking at it.
It's a great way of looking at it. Yeah. Like, it's really
same
not a
thing
threat,
for guided surgery, by the way.
You're not going to be competitive if you're not utilizing this tool set.
Guided surgery will not replace the talented surgeon, but it will replace the surgeon who doesn't want to use guides.
That's
beautiful. I'm going to steal that from you.
That's steal it from Elliot. Yeah. I didn't.
I don't know him, so it's
okay. Steal
it's
from
fine.
Me.
Okay,
so we promised a pithy podcast.
There's so much. I know. I really like him.
Yeah.
Do you have to go?
I'll be back. I'll come back.
Wait. Hold on. So I just want to ask one question, because I love to see when someone is tapped into the future, and you know, you've probably forgotten more about anything we've talked about than we even know, right? Where is, like, what are you most excited about in dentistry? Like, where do you see the profession? And this is kind of a global question, but like, if we're to have this conversation in 5 years, does it look much different? Does it not look much different?
The reason this is such a compelling business for me, as I told you, I went from like running this large company that did not provide a lot of utility to humans at the end of the day, right? Like, now what I believe we're going to be accomplished, I know I'm bringing this back to Pearl, but this is part of the answer. Part of what I think AI will do, I'll say, as a function of the industry, and what Pearl definitely will do directly, is positively impact billions of lives in the near term.
Okay.
Right. And we're going to elevate the standard of care. So if you look at the history of modern dentistry, what changes the game? You have the toothbrush, and then you have the drill, and then you have amalgams, and then you have digital
fluoride,
dentistry, and then you have fluoride, and you have the intraoral scanner.
Anesthesia was a big one.
When does everything change and the level of care gets elevated in a way that nobody's ever going to turn back? It's whenever you have the infusion or the introduction of a new technology. So what is AI? AI is a new, it's a moment where we have this like nascent technology that has pretty much already arrived and is rapidly getting infused into the industry, and in many ways is going to have this kind of fundamentally impactful impact on all of dentistry, right? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I look at it. We're on a continuum of just like technology playing a role in elevating the standard of care. What's interesting about AI in particular, though, is it doesn't, it's not a single function thing. It's touching so many parts of the category that it's going to lift things up. Really,
I mean, we're seeing it even just the patient management software. We're seeing it in phone conversation. Like, you know, so it's like, you know, I know it's a different version of AI. You're talking, you have more like synthetic vision kind of thing.
We do computer vision.
Computer vision.
And there's a whole other world of just, you know, like NLP, right? Natural language processing based AI and generative AI. I mean, all these things have roles to play.
Yes. So I know that's a hard question to answer. Like, hey, what do you, you know, rub your magic ball and tell me where it's going to be in 5 years. It's just fascinating to see the advancements. They're not slow moving. I talk about this like, and maybe I misquote it, but like the half-life. I always say like the corpus of data that you have, right, there's a half-life in computers. And for example, that volume of information is doubled every X number of years.
What's that law called again?
Moore's Law.
Moore's Law.
It's doubling the number of... transistors on an integrated circuit every
and so it's just, you know, you obviously live and eat and breathe this stuff.
Here's what I'll say, maybe as a final note, I think it's kind of interesting. It's like right now what we do is it's super sexy, right? Mm-hmm. Like in dentistry, right? So you get to, it's very visual and it's exciting and a lot of people are talking about it, but it's like we're not at the moment of maximum impact yet. The reason that when this becomes sexy in my mind is when it's just the plumbing and nobody thinks about it, and it's just a total standard of care. That's when it has maximal impact.
What's the penetration?
It's just like the Apple Vision Pro. Yeah. It's like super sexy, but zero impact on anything. In 10 years, when everybody's sitting at home with this thing on their face, and it changes the nature of work and interaction and everything, and then you've impacted the planet in some way, positive or negatively. So I'm excited for the very unsexy future of this just being part of the plumbing, a utility, electricity and water, AI,
It will be based on 25 years of clinical practice and knowing the time pressure and the differences. I mean, it's an absolute, it's not an if, it's a when.
But it's also not a $100,000 piece of hardware.
Right.
It's super cheap.
Right.
It has an ROI associated with it, not because it's designed to, but because there's an epidemic of underdiagnosis.
Well, with a 30% higher increased treatment acceptance and
servicing so much more.
And $300 a month. It's like you can do the math pretty damn quick. You have to diagnose two crowns a year.
You can integrate it in a day. Like, there's just not a lot of barriers.
I have one question. I know you got to run, but I'm just curious. Do you have some function of like doctor tracker to, you know, because we all integrate associates, or many of our audience integrates associates, and we have to spend a lot of time like looking at their quality of care and their post-op x-rays and stuff like that. Can you assign this AI supervisor?
With our vast intelligence tools, that you're able to look at everything by practitioner, by operatory, and kind of slice and dice the data however you want.
That's great.
Well, I mean, post-op x-rays on fillings, you could see how well they're adapted.
Right. Yep.
I mean, imagine that. Look at the savings of time. You know how many doctors I've talked to? I brought this associate and they were wonderful.
The audit
now I'm
of
noticing,
care.
Now I'm noticing I haven't audited their care because I've been busy and now I have to redo 2 years of work.
Right.
Holy shit.
That's awesome.
That's amazing.
Good question.
Well, thank you for super busy, and we appreciate you doing what you're doing for dentistry, and I hope your dad's proud of you because it's pretty freaking awesome.
We all
want to
make our dads proud.
We all do. We all want to make our dads proud.
Dad's like, what are you doing again with that?
It's really funny.
Does he understand what you're doing?
Oh yeah, he loves it. I mean, it's so funny even to me that I ended up in dentistry in the end.
Yeah, you did. It's tried to get out.
It's like some kind of inertia that pulls you back in, right?
No, it's a genetic abnormality.
Totally.
Yeah, it's like Tay-Sachs, but like it just comes back around. You can't get out of it.
Tay-Sachs. I haven't heard that since dental school.
Well, you know, we got two Hebrews here, so I figured I'll bring it back to bring it back to something relevant.
Oh my God! All right, everybody, we'll see y'all next time.
Are you a Hebrew?